International Diplomatic Student Association is Hungary-based student organization for university students interested in political science, multilateral treaties, and intergovernmental relations. IDSA podcast aims to educate its listeners on career opportunities to university students in Hungary, opening their minds to pressing social and geopolitical issues. The podcast is recorded with the support of EPR Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of the IDSA podcast, an exclusive project launched by the International Diplomatic Student Association. My name is Dora Toth, and my co-host is Valeria Sielak, and today we have the honor to talk Her Excellency, Mrs. Trans-Kaimon, Ambassador Extraordinary of Plenipotentiary of the Kingdom of Norway to Hungary and accredited in Slovenia. In the past, Mrs. Kaimon has also worked as an ambassador to South Africa and Slovakia and has been active as a senior advisor at the Office of the Prime Minister in Oslo and at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Oslo. Mrs. Kaimon, thank you so much for accepting to talk to us today.
Well, thank you so much for that introduction, and thank you for the invitation, not least. It means a lot to me to be here.
Mrs. Ambassador, I believe that the best place to begin today is by mentioning that in recognition of your work for the global community, you were awarded with the title of Commander of the Royal Norwegian Order of Merit in 2015. And I want to ask, what does that personally mean to you, and what does the award entail exactly?
Well, this the Order of Merit was actually founded by the late King Olav V of Norway back in 1985. And it is a reward for outstanding service in the interest of Norway. So it is basically an acknowledgement of a very often hard work, long hours that we spend to promote and support Norwegian business, culture, climate policy, education, cooperation, you name it. So I'm very grateful to be awarded this acknowledgement. And it's also a big encouragement because, you know, what you get as a reward for hard work is more hard work. That's how it is. But the Order of Merit gives me great encouragement to continue.
Have you ever encountered difficulties in the beginning of your diplomatic career because of your gender? Do you think that it is easier nowadays for a woman in Norway and Hungary to break the glass ceiling and have the same chances at succeeding as their male counterparts, especially in the diplomatic field?
You know, countries will have different strategies and countries will have different policies. And in my country, it has been a clear goal, and it still is a clear goal, to have more women diplomats, to have more female diplomats. Before, we were very few. But then the government and the minister decided that they want more. So when I started, we were 4 young women out of 12 students altogether. Now it's 50-50. And sometimes it's even more than 50% women. So it's more of a natural balance. And I think over the years, the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Oslo have also set itself clear goals and ambitions on how many female ambassadors will we want to have by this and that time. So that has meant really an encouragement for the system to find those women, because it's not the lack of qualified women that is the problem, because there are a lot, but it is actually how to find them and how to look for them, which is the encouragement. If you set yourself a goal saying that, okay, the system needs to have 50% female ambassadors by such and such a year, then the system needs to find those women. Because sometimes women don't put themselves forward like some men do, but you know, it doesn't mean that they're not as competent as their male counterparts. So I think it's, for us, that has been a way forward. When it comes to difficulties, and I remember when I had my second posting, which was in New York, working with what we call the First Committee, which is International Security and Disarmament. That was, at that time, it was very much like a male-dominated area, you know, very sort of disarmament and international security was very male-dominant. And I encountered colleagues from other countries who would give me compliments. They would say, oh, you look nice today. You know, you look, oh, that dress, I love your dress, things like that. But when I wanted to discuss the substance and the policy with them, they didn't really bother to listen to a woman. That taught me a lot. And then I wonder, can I tell you a story? Something which happened to one of my colleagues. Her name is Mona. We started in the ministry together. You know, of course, being students of international affairs, you know that there have been many attempts to achieve peace in the Middle East. Many have tried. And you might also remember that there was what was called the Oslo Accords. Oslo is, of course, the capital of Norway. And behind these Oslo Accords, you know, Oslo Agreement was, among others, a Norwegian couple. The Oslo Accords were signed in Washington, outside the White House in Washington, in 1993. But let me just tell you, backtrack a little bit and tell you a story about how this all came about. Because my friend Mona and I, we were both on our way to our first posting. We had to apply for different postings. And we had handed in our list, as we call it. And then the personnel department told all of us, all of us who were in that group of 12 students, that you have to submit one more name, like what we call a hardship posting. So we were good girls. So I put one hardship posting on my list, and she put one hardship posting on her list. So it was Abidjan, Ivory Coast for me, and it was Cairo in Egypt for her. And then I called personnel and I said, how many applied for Abidjan? And they said, one. So then I knew, okay, I'm going to Abidjan. I cried because I didn't really want to go there. I just put it on the list because to be a good girl. So I cried. And my friend Mona, she said, I don't dare to call personnel to ask how many applied for Cairo. Can you do it? So I called and they said, one. So then she knew, okay, she was going to Cairo. And her husband, we left, and her husband accompanied her. And they started making contacts with Palestinian people, Israeli people, Egyptian people. They were working in the networks. A couple of years later, secret meetings started in Oslo, where Palestinians and Israelis would meet in secret and try to negotiate some kind of agreement. This happened very, very secretly. For some years until it was made public and you had the Oslo Accords, behind which was this Norwegian couple. And the reason was Mona got posted to Cairo. So you never know where life will lead you. And she is now our ambassador in New York. Luckily, there was no glass ceiling there. Because what is important is that with a glass ceiling, you don't use the competences that you have, you know, that women possess. If you break the glass ceiling, if there is no glass ceiling, you use the competences that the organization has, in my view.
This was such an inspirational story, Mrs. Ambassador, and in line with what you just said, when it comes to Norway, it is true that the first thing that comes into many of our minds is the spectacular social and political system of the country. And recently, new policies were launched in terms of child caring in order to create equal parenting and equal rights in the labor market. So could you tell us briefly about this new approach, and do you believe that this policy can also have a potential impact on the diplomatic sector?
I think, again, what happened in my country was that there was a clear political goal and a clear political will to achieve gender equality. So that was behind the policies. And it didn't really start that recently. It's something that has developed over the years. So the government has encouraged gender equality by putting into place mechanisms, you know, that you would have some flexible working hours, that you would have childcare, which people can afford to pay for, that you have parental leave to take care of your children when they are small, etc., etc. But these are measures that have been taken over many years, but with the clear political will to achieve gender equality. And it has worked. You know, more than 76% of women are active in the labour market. We have a system whereby both men and women are encouraged to work and take care of the family at the same time. So that you want to make it possible for people, for women and for men, to work and to take care of the family. So, and some may, you know, think that it's been quite drastic policies, and one doesn't have to agree. But as I said, each country will choose for itself. But for us, when we established that the parental leave should be divided equally between the father and the mother, and one third, and the last third part they could decide who would take the parental leave. And this has actually meant that 9 out of 10 fathers have made use of the parental leave, which I think is very good for the child and the father and the mother and the family. So it's those encouragements that for us has worked.
Let's move on to another diplomatic topic. How can you describe the relations between Hungary and Norway in terms of diplomacy?
You know, I think that Hungary and Norway, we've had very good and solid relations over many, many years. We work together in many of the international organizations. You know, we are together in NATO, at the OSCE in Vienna, at the Council of Europe in Strasbourg, at the UN in Geneva, and in New York. And we are also connected in Europe through the European Economic Area Agreement. So we have many meeting places, you know, where we can work together. And we have, you know, in a general sense, we have relations that date back many hundred years. Our countries Norway became independent in 1905, so it's not that long ago. But we immediately established an honorary consul general in Budapest once we received our independence from Sweden. So the contacts have always been there.
And speaking about these contacts, last year we marked the 100th anniversary of the start of the Hungarian-Norwegian diplomatic relations. And as for you, what were the biggest diplomatic successes between the two countries during this 100 years?
You know, in diplomacy, one doesn't always speak about big successes, but maybe one is equally aware of the small steps that together will make something positive and something good. And I think in our relations are characterized rather by many small steps and people-to-people contacts that have been very, very important in establishing the Hungary-Norwegian relations. You know, we have 800-900 Norwegian students who study here. The rich cultural scene in Hungary attracts a lot of good Norwegian writers. There are filmmakers who come here to produce films, theatre plays are put up. So that is also a connections, although not formal sort of diplomatic relations. But I think diplomacy now is not just governments talking to each other, it's the people-to-people contacts that build us. And we have Scandinavian studies at LTE University here. Lots of Norwegian tourists come to Budapest because they love the city and they love the country, which is easy to understand. Also, back in 1956, actually, when the uprising was, it was 1,500 Hungarians found a new home in Norway. And, of course, it was in 1920 that we established formally our diplomatic relations. And relations, yes, they do develop with time. And you know, I can imagine that 100 years ago, you had these men sitting around a table, signing formal agreements to recognize each other, diplomatically speaking. But I think that those men who sat there 100 years ago, I don't think they would have, they could not have imagined, you know, what would bring the younger generations together 100 years later. Because I think, I know, that to many young Hungarians, Norway is all about black metal and death metal music. And there's a famous Norwegian black metal band, Mayhem. They, I think, are especially popular here, or they used to be. And do you know that the lead singer in Mayhem is Hungarian? He is Attila Cihar. And so, what can we say? Relations develop, and maybe sometimes they take unexpected turns.
Thank you so much. So, you were appointed as the ambassador of Norway to Hungary in September last year. The last 1.5 years have been extremely challenging due to COVID-19. As a diplomat, what difficulties and challenges have you encountered during the pandemic outbreak?
Well, as you mentioned, I have been ambassador to South Africa and Slovakia before. So I know what it's like in the beginning when you just go out there and you meet as many people as you possibly can, and you enjoy building on the networks of your predecessor and establish new contacts as well. And I think the perks of diplomatic life is actually to meet those large numbers of interesting people and enjoy the culture and the beauty of the country where you're posted. And then it was not possible to do it in a, you know, the way that you would normally do. So I miss it, I must say, because the reason why I wanted to come to Hungary is, of course, it's not just the beauty of the country that I had experienced before, because I've been posted in three of your neighboring countries. And so I knew from visiting that it's such a beautiful and great country. But I knew also that there would be so many interesting and good people to meet. And I'm not leaving yet, so hopefully with COVID at one point behind us, I can do that. And I'm really looking forward to it.
As a certified ambassador to Hungary and Slovenia, I can imagine that your schedule is quite busy, and that's why we are so grateful for having you here. But in this line of ideas, could you share with us what your everyday work looks like as an ambassador, from when you wake up until you go to bed?
Oh, thank you for that question, because that's always a difficult one. Because I think that if you want to be a diplomat, if you want to be an ambassador, you don't look for every day to be like yesterday, wasn't it? You don't look for routines, because there are so many different things that you can do. You know, during 1 week, I could make speeches about gender equality, about climate issues, about disarmament, you name it. And, you know, people think you are an expert, but you are not, but you know a little bit about everything. So you build on that, and then you prepare for what you are going to do. So if I were to describe a normal day, you know, a non-COVID day, it could perhaps start with an internal planning meeting with the staff at the embassy. I could attend a conference, for instance, on climate issues, making a speech, be in a panel. I could host a lunch in my residence for Norwegian business to put them together with important contacts in the country. Then perhaps after lunch, I will go to a meeting in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade here to talk about any issue that is on the agenda of the day. Hopefully I would have time for a walk, just to walk in the streets of Budapest, because I really love that. And in the evening, perhaps I would host a pizza dinner for these Norwegian students. So that could be an example of a day, a normal ambassador day.
What I think it's really impressive about you is that you do not only have an experience only in terms of bilateral and multilateral diplomacy, because in 1991, you worked as the first secretary for the UN. What were the issues that you were dealing with that time, and what is your favorite memory regarding this position?
Well, I worked in the Norwegian delegation to the UN, and I think I mentioned before that I was doing disarmament and international affairs, because when you're posted in your country's delegation to the UN, you are given responsibility for different committees. So you could be in the legal committee, you could be in the economic and social committee, you could be in the financial committee, and I was in the disarmament and international security committee. I do remember long hours and long meetings, and sometimes a bit frustrating, because you move a comma, but do you really move anything in the world? It's a lot of paperwork, but hopefully it will have an impact, and usually it does. But at 2 o'clock in the morning, I mean, you're still sitting there at the negotiating table, it does not feel as if there is much progress. I also followed sort of political issues that were on the agenda for the Security Council, which are always the bigger problems in the world. And perhaps I can tell you a little story about that, because that is also an example of how life takes you places you didn't know you were going to go. Because this was in from 91 to 94, and of course it was the war in former Yugoslavia. And Hungary is a neighbor, of course, so you knew what was happening there and how devastating it was. And then, because I had followed these issues in the Security Council, Oslo said, okay, we need a person who knows a little bit about former Yugoslavia. We need a person in Belgrade, because we don't have an ambassador. So we need someone, you know. So they sent me there as a chargé d'affaires. And at that time, it was a former Norwegian Minister of Foreign Affairs who was the negotiator for the United Nations in this conference on the former Yugoslavia that was established to negotiate peace. So, because he was Norwegian, of course, I had close contacts with him, and it also meant, and his staff, and it also meant that I could follow very closely these international negotiations on an issue that was on top of the international agenda. That was very, very interesting. And I left Belgrade, and I had my son. I was on parental leave, and then I was called to ask if I could go to Vienna, because Norway was going to have the chairmanship of the OSCE, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And they knew, of course, you know, the Balkans, Western Balkans would be high on the agenda for our chairmanship. So I was called, asked them to come to Vienna to do the Western Balkans, Kosovo, Serbia crisis, and which was very challenging, because that was the year that NATO bombed Serbia. But there I was in 1999. In Vienna. I had 5 great years in Vienna. I didn't know that I would end up there, but I did.
This is very impressive. You really worked in quite a lot of countries. And on another note, you were also a senior advisor of the Department for United Nations and Global Affairs. And I want to ask you, how should we imagine your role there? And what were your main areas of work and responsibilities within this position?
I was there, if I remember correctly, I think I was there 2008, 2009. Around about that time, and I was dealing with peace building, which was very rewarding, actually, because Norway has always been a very active role in multilateral affairs generally, because we believe in countries working together to find common solutions and to solve global issues. So my job was actually to help strengthen the capability and capacity of the United Nations on peace building, which means that you have to look at peace building in a comprehensive manner. It's not just sending in some soldiers. You have to build the peace. When peace is established, you need to establish the institutions, you need police to help establish police, you need experts on how to structure government offices, for instance. So that was very rewarding, actually, to help build a society that had come out of a crisis. And I also helped establish a Norwegian agency called NOREF, which works internationally on peace negotiations. A little bit back to my friend, you know, who was part of the couple who worked on the Oslo Accords. And it's actually building a little bit on that tradition that Norway has to assist parties in trying to find solutions to their problems, to their war, if it has come to that. So we bring people together, actually, or try to bring people together so that they can talk rather than fight. And can I just say one thing in relation to this? Because, you know, if you're going to mediate, if you're going to have parties talk to each other, it's very important that those groups include women as well, because they bring often another perspective to the peace negotiations. And actually, we see that in peace processes where female mediators have been included, they last longer.
Some of our listeners are interested in working at the ambassadorial level, and some of them are chasing the dream of working for the UN. So what would you tell them? How can they achieve their goal?
Through hard work, I can say. Of course, to become an ambassador is not the first thing you do in your career. I can explain perhaps the way it is in our system, and is that you have to do an entry exam at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs so that you can join the Diplomatic Academy. And that's quite a tough exam. Then you have a couple of years of training in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Then you go abroad, usually for two different embassies or delegations. And then, of course, you are at a quite junior level, but it is through working at the junior level that you learn, you know, what is this diplomacy thing. Then you go back to Oslo, perhaps for a few years. You go back abroad, then you're in a higher position. Maybe you are a deputy at an embassy. Then usually you go back to Oslo for a couple of years, and then suddenly you find yourself qualified as an ambassador. But it's all based on the experience that you have and you're building up your knowledge. And the work as an ambassador is, of course, you're the representative of your country in the country where you serve. But you are the face, so to speak, of the embassy. But the embassy is a team. And it's very important then to, you lead the team, of course, but the important thing is to cooperate, you know, in the team so that everybody can give their best, both diplomats and local staff, because that's the only way an embassy can work well and achieve things is actually that we all work together for the same goal. And then the ambassador can go out there and shine.
Dear Mrs. Ambassador, our listeners are predominantly young international students who are either interested in or are aspiring to become diplomats in the near future. So as the final question, can you share a piece of advice or wisdom based on your own experience as to how to make a difference in the field of diplomacy?
Let me start by saying that diplomacy is many times considered as something prestigious. You know, that there's a lot of prestige, it's sometimes glamorous. It's not always glamorous. As I mentioned before, it requires a lot of hard work, but definitely you are in such an interesting field of work that you almost forget that it's actually a hard work. But you need to like the job. You need to enjoy what you are doing. You have to be open. You have to be curious. You have to want to learn. And I think also that you need to adapt to the different circumstances that you work in, because every country is different. And, you know, when I got to know that Abidjan would be my posting, I cried. as I think I said, because I was so disappointed, because it was down as number 5, I think, on my list. I wanted to go to number 1. But then I said, no, okay, this is how it is. I'm going to Abidjan. I'm going to make the most of it. And I'm going to enjoy it. And I had a wonderful time in Abidjan. So I think just follow your dreams and work hard to fulfill those dreams and be happy.
Before we are wrapping up this podcast, is there anything, is there any wisdom that you would like to share with our listeners?
I'm not sure if I'm a very wise person, but I think that maybe as I already mentioned, you know, to be aspire, you know, that you aspire to do something and that you to want to do a good job. Because it's when you do a good job, that is when others recognize you and see you, and they might offer you an even better job if you do a good job where you are.
Dear Mrs. Kaimon, thank you so much again for making the time today and for promoting, upholding the friendship between Hungary and Norway. And dear listeners, we arrived at the end of this week's podcast, in which we had the pleasure to discuss the life and activity of the Norwegian ambassador to Hungary, while also diving into the subtitles of diplomacy and foreign affairs. My name is Dora Tóth, and I had the pleasure to co-host with this episode with Valeria Szilák. Thank you for being with us, and stay tuned for the upcoming episodes. Thank you for listening.